So the meditation, like life, is always about exactly what's happening. What you could call the facts. The facts. The facts sometimes include the way the mind interprets things. For many human beings, the way their mind interprets things is what they think, believe, and assume is the truth or is reality. One of the first filters that appears when we're allowing ourselves to open into the factuality of things is that the mind has, to varying degrees, a preferential tendency towards different things in life. One of the main facts of the human experience that the mind has preference about are feelings. Good feeling, bad feeling, positive feeling, negative feeling, desirable feeling, undesirable feeling, okay feeling, not okay feeling. And this can go round and round and round, this preferential tendency towards feelings, towards body sensations. And this preferential tendency towards feelings and bodily sensations gets projected out onto the so-called world around this body, and these preferences, or this lens of preference, appears about so-called external things. Other people, places, and the whole myriad of what you might call the world that we live in. Am I making sense? Okay. So this veil, let's call it that, this veil, potential veil, of preference can appear within the factuality of observation and begin to be seen for what it is. And what is it? It's exactly what I just said. It's a veil. The third Zen patriarch, fairly sort of historically famous character in the teachings, said, "The way is clear and open for he who has no preferences." And if you then want to have no preferences, now you have a preference about not wanting to have preferences. So what is the third Zen patriarch saying when he says the way is clear and open for he who has no preferences? How is this way revealed? And this way, by the way, is freedom. This way, by the way, is emancipation here and now. Not later, not somewhere else, not in some other time, some other place. And not in some other world. It's here and now. Or it's nowhere. Because if it isn't here and now, then it's nowhere. Yeah? If it isn't here and now, then it doesn't exist. Except as an imagination. Yeah? And an imagination can only happen here and now. Everything I'm saying is about the factuality of existence for us. So, what is this preferential veil? And for some, that question leads to, let me see if I can figure out where this veil comes from. And why would I want to figure out where this veil, or anything else for that matter, comes from, if not to understand it? And if I perceive, or I experience, or I feel in some way that that which I'm trying to understand in some way or other feels difficult, troubling, unsettling to me, my interest in understanding it is so I will not be troubled by it. Why else would I want to understand it? And most of us are strongly conditioned, we've been educated, we've been encouraged, it's even been demanded of us that we understand things. Even those things that we can't understand. Try to understand. Please understand me. You want to know what troubles people who are in relationship, let's say partnering or intimate relationship, marriages and whatnot, you know what the most difficult thing is between two people? Not feeling understood. You don't understand. I told you a million times. Or I told you once, loud and clear.
Or if I told you once, I told you a thousand times.
That's right.
If I told you once, I told you a million times.
There you go. And I'm not going to say it again. Round and round that can go. What I'm pointing to is that in the observation of the factuality of things, there's another, you might say, kind of understanding that can emerge. And this understanding I'm speaking of now doesn't so readily, I feel, benefit from the use of the word understand, but better to use a different term, realize. See clearly. What I'm saying is that when preference arises, if it's allowed to arise in the factuality of experience, not interfered with, there isn't a preference about the preference, so forth and so on, then what the preference does is it comes up like this, like a bubble, and it pops. And that pop of the bubble of preference, that cessation of the veil of preference, reveals the way. And the way is clear and open for he who has no preferences. So what I'm saying then is that we don't need to understand where all these preferences come from. We don't have to do a big biographical, archaeological dig search in the archives of where we think we come from. But rather to see clearly, what is this thing called preference? We don't even really need to be concerned with, so what's the influence of this? And many times you already know the influence of this if you paid attention some. It colors, it divides, it segregates, it separates, it biases, it prejudices, it breaks this world up into at times a million pieces. And if you really look at it closely in terms of how it can function, it's about war. Little war. Little war. Just a little war inside. Little more war out here. Big war. I prefer this so much, I want to do away with that. And let's be very clear. I prefer this, therefore I will be threatened by that. The more I prefer this, the more I'll be threatened by that. Fill in the thises and the thats. We don't need examples, do we? Got your own? They just show up if you look at what's coming up in part of the factuality of experience. Have you noticed the potency of the debate going on about don't ask, don't tell? And they get one of the old timers on the line, and he says with a somewhat gravelly voice, it's very important to understand that those who have much rank and experience, who are really calling the shots, might just pull out and not be doing their jobs. They might just back right out and say, I retire, I quit, if you don't do it my way. Which is basically this. Don't let any gay guys near me. I might not want to do my job. I'll drop out. Crossed my boundary with that one. It's deep. Beyond preference, isn't it? It's like good and evil. Okay, fundamentally not okay. I'll allow it, I won't allow it. So what happens when we're sitting, and if the meditation is in fact, as I'm suggesting it is, about what is happening as it's happening, moment to moment, and that's all inclusive, you'd say, well, okay, what about fantasy and memories? Well, when fantasy or memories come up, then they're within the factuality of what's happening. It's a completely and utterly spontaneous unfoldment. Including within that unfoldment is a sense that I just chose something like moving these hands, speaking these words, drinking the water, sitting this way, sitting that way, moving like this. That's part of the spontaneity too. I just did this, I just did that. That arises spontaneously within the factuality. And there's no have to about see clearly the nature of the habitual tendency of preferring. There's no whip behind us saying, you must see that, look at that, pay attention to that. We'll punish you if you don't watch that. It's optional. But allowing that option to operate, the option of letting that be seen clearly, opens life into what's called life as it is. The way is life as it is. Life as it is is free as it is already. It's not going to become free. It's not going to have to understand its freeness. It's like that cat's tail moving freely. This is a little example of the whole shebang. This is really simple. It's not complicated. It doesn't need to be understood. It doesn't need to be figured out. Now, sometimes when the simplicity actually registers as totally enough. You see, because sometimes in life, things aren't enough for humans. Here we go, preference again. Things aren't enough. It wasn't enough. So here's the bowl. I finished dinner. I know I have some ice cream in the freezer. And I go and I put some ice cream in the bowl. And I go back and I eat the ice cream. And I finish the ice cream and I do the... Whoops, there. You know the sound. I might even... And then I want some more. Been there? And I might say, okay, well, I had that much, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to have about just that much. Like I had 3 scoops, I'll just have 1 more scoop. Because 3 more scoops would be too much, and 2 would probably be too much too, and 1/2 isn't going to do it. I don't just want a little bit more, I want a scoop more. So I put that scoop in there, and then I eat that too, and I might do my repetitive, the milky part, get that? And I might have a sense that, I'm done. And I put the bowl down. That's called cessation. That's called a temporal freedom. What if, put it like that for the moment, what if continually that ah is like? Does your mind say, it's not possible? That's not possible. And if your mind says that's not possible, it's not possible for that mind. Because it says it's not possible. Doop! You said it, you get it. Right there, bang. That's possible. Yeah, that's possible. It could be that way all the time. Finish the ice cream, 1 more scoop. I want that. Oh, you just did another scoop. Another scoop, another scoop, another scoop, another scoop. Oh, I'm sick. I just scooped out the happiness and ended up in... It's like that Saturday morning when I was a kid and, oh, the pancakes were so good, and I want another pancake. And then I crossed the line. Oh, that line, that famous line. I crossed that line and it would taste suddenly like cardboard. I want to back up from that. Just, oh, I won't do that again. You know, I got it going too fast. I was excited. I forgot. I wasn't watching. Someone else put it in my mouth. No, they didn't do that. So I'll pay attention. I'll just pay really close attention. I won't make any mistakes. I won't make any mistakes. Because there's something so, like, sort of delicate there that I touched it, and I don't want to forget that. I can't forget that. But I can't seem to return to it. can't manufacture it again. I can't plan the vacation the second time and make it like that one before. No kiss ever is like the one before. No ice cream scoop. Is this a tragedy? It is. When I'm in that loop, it's a subtle, profound tragedy. Notice the preference to not have tragedy. Notice the preference to not have loss. Notice the preference to have the gain, to have it my way, to have what I want. See, what we miss is that what we really, really want, that we don't quite get clearly until we do, is that spontaneous unfolding that's happening beyond preference. It's not a particular state. It's not a particular feeling. It's not a particular thought. What is it? What is the way beyond preferences? Well, you could play with it a little differently. Where is that way? Pointing into something now that we can't think about very easily, can we? So there's nothing we can do about it, or there's something we can do about it? If there's something we can do about it, we better get going. And if there's nothing we can do about it, well, then I guess we should just sit here. Is this one of the big, you might say, debates in the minds of many humans? Should we do something? Or not? Should we do something about this, or should we let it be? I'm driving my son to high school this morning, and he has his typical paper in front of him. He always has a paper in front of him, it seems, on the way to school, when he's not driving. I say, "What's that?" He says, "Shakespeare." I said, "What Shakespeare?" He said, "To be or not to be, that Shakespeare." Could just translate that a little bit, couldn't you? To do or not to do. So I said, "What are you doing with Shakespeare?" He said, "I'm memorizing this." I said, "Would you read it to me?" So he read it. When he finished, you might know the passage. You might know the passage. "To be or not to be, that is the question." La 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 la, goes on. He finishes, and I immediately go, "What about that section there?" And he listens, and then he goes, "The point of this for me is not to analyze it. It's simply to memorize it." They're not interested in understanding it. You know, there's some serious stuff in there. It's like, do you kill them or not? You know, there's a hemlock and they're drinking it, and you know, it's serious stuff. I'm not interested in understanding it. I'm just memorizing. Because he's doing what he's been told to do. Memorize it when you come in class for Wednesday. Memorize this. You'll be doing something that says memorization. The difference, in a way, between that and this is there is nothing being prescribed here. There might be some description going on. It might be interesting, but there's no prescription. And that sometimes is befuddling to that part of me that's trying to sort out what did this third Zen patriarch mean when the way is clear and open for he who has no preference. How do I have that? If that's even something that one's interested in. Because see, in order to say, how do I have that, that means I'm thinking or believing or assuming that I don't have that. What the third Zen patriarch didn't say in the opening line of that passage is that the preferences and seeing the preferences clearly are part of the way. There's nothing that isn't a part of the way. But if that part of the way, called the preferences, dominates consciousness, there's the war. There's the division. There's the separation. There's the trouble. Do you see the difference between the preference dominating and the preference simply one moment I like Peter, the next moment I like Ann, the next moment I like you, the next moment I don't like me. One who doesn't see what the third Zen patriarch is saying is going, some of that's okay and some of that's not okay. It was okay to like Ann, it was okay to like Peter, it was okay to like you. It's not okay to not like me. I need to like me too. But wait a minute, on Thursday I couldn't help but not like me. It just came up. Last time we were here, we were focusing on how all form, all things, are empty, meaning they don't last, they're not solid, and there's no I or me that can be found in anything, including awareness. So there's no I or me in preferences then, regardless of how strong they are. Yeah? Regardless of how potent or how heavy the valence is towards the positive, the negative. Flora knows nothing of this. Bell knows nothing of this. The bell doesn't say, I'm good. I'm bad. I like you. I don't like you. Has nothing to do with it. Doesn't bother with it. So how come we do? How come we get bothered by all that, caught up in all that? And one of the answers is because we can't help it. A more involved response, a little bit more involved, is that we don't see things clearly. We see things through the veil of preference, through the veil of bias, until we don't. And that shift from seeing it through preference and veil, it being anything, to not can happen. Veil might come back up again, and you believe it. That was good, that was bad. That was just a little bit bad. Oh, that was really bad. People sometimes say, are you saying that having a broken arm is not worse than having an unbroken arm? Because I thought this was about well-being. Are you saying that having a broken arm and a cast on that arm and an ache and a pain in that arm and maybe some nerve complications after the cast comes off for years is not worse than having an unbroken arm? And the answer is... just different. Just different to who? To somebody who says, it's just different. Could there be somebody, so to speak, who says, no difference, still an arm? Could we flip it all the way and say, there might be some people who go, you know what? It wasn't going on the whole time, but at a certain point in that unfoldment of the broken arm, I liked having a broken arm more than not. Is that a weird person? What happens is with the so-called unwanted things in life, the painful things in life, the difficult things in life, there's a thing called acknowledgement. That means we start out with, this is happening, it's part of the factuality. Works a little better for most of us than to deny it. This is not happening. I did not break my arm. I did not break my arm. Okay? I did not get in the accident. Okay, I did not rear end. Somebody almost rear-ended me on the way over here, and I was thinking, I wonder how this will find its way into the talk.
So almost rear-ended you on your way here tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, you know how that goes when you're like stopping and the person behind you is just looking like they're not going to stop, mm-hmm. and you're watching them, and there's a car in front of you and you got no place to go? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. And then there comes the point where the headlights of their car disappear into the area of your trunk. And there's a sort of a perceptual, you might say, clarification or distortion, depending on your perception or preference. I don't know how close they are anymore or how fast they're going. And there's a kind of a brace and a wait for the... And then a... Oh, it's just like the ice cream. didn't hit me.
Like there's a people, at least one person not as lucky. Did y'all hear about the horrific accident on I-75 just north of Newbury Road yesterday morning? Nobody heard about the
yeah. It's not a lot of accidents out there on I-75. There's certain sections that seem like they're like a Bermuda Triangle. Where was I? Where was I, Anne?
I think you were speaking about preferences.
Mm-hmm. Rear-ended.
Yeah, I was.
Am I having a preference about not being rear-ended?
You're denying that you'd ever broken your arm.
Yeah. My arm was out here and I was denying that I hadn't broken it. And I was moving from acknowledging that I broke it. I really did. I broke it. It's got a cast and whatever. It's going to take this much time, according to the physician, for it to feel da-da-da-da. I'm going to need some physical therapy too, he said, da-da-da-da. I moved from acknowledging it to accepting it. That could take years for some of us to accept something like a broken arm even. Or that our cat died, or dog needed to be put down. Or that somebody rear-ended me. That could take a long time for some of us to accept. Or it could all be done in an instant. Full acceptance. But not until acceptance occurs can appreciation arise. And when appreciation and gratitude arises, the whole shebang of the broken arm is turned inside out. Mm-hmm. That's called complete transformation of that which was unwanted, unfortunate. Even, I didn't need that. Well, you got it anyways, Paul. What did I do to deserve that one? What wasn't I doing right? Life, meanwhile, says, I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to you. You're just blah, blah, blah. I'm not listening. Bless you. If you want, you can listen to me, but I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening. When everything goes just right. In my case, I forget that I have a certain number of appointments. And I put something else in there instead that takes me to a whole other part of the city. And so I'm literally not going to be where I'm supposed to be unless I can be in two places at the same time. And the brain misses it. And then all of a sudden, one of the appointments that was going to come to the place where I was not going to be calls on the phone ahead of time and says, oh, by the way, I need to cancel the appointment today. And then the brain comes back from vacation. That's where it's been. And it goes, oh, I was taken care of. That worked. God, thank you, grace. Make up something at that point. Wow, synchronicity. Because it worked. It worked out better. It worked out right. It worked out according to what you call your preference. People sometimes think synchronicity only happens at 3:10 in the afternoon on Tuesday when everything goes bing! Wow! It lined up. Synchronicity is the only thing that's happening. We're the ones who say it isn't. Or it is according to what you think it is. The whole thing is synchronistic. What am I saying? That it's already set up? That it's already predestined? That it's already designed? No way.
But it's all happening simultaneously.
It's all happening simultaneously. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And that simultaneity is another way to speak about synchronicity. It's another way to speak about a harmony beyond preference. So in that sitting, I'll conclude with this, in that sitting, let's say, and observing life as it is, the factuality, there can come a kind of a balance at times. You been there? Where this feels, the whole thing kind of goes, settle, evens out. If it was like a tuning fork, instead of going, comes in, settles, balance. Subtly in there, the mind could be going, I like this. This is the right way. This feels good. I'll just stay with this if I can. I'll reinforce this. I'll recapitulate it. I'll sit again and try to have it as preference. And yet, that balance that's emerging sometimes merges in such a way that you have 5, 10 minutes to sit, 20 minutes or 45, whatever. It's time to stop, and there's a clear sense of preferring not to. There's a clear sense of something's going on here. You've been there? Prefer not to stop. And you're not doing anything. It's not ice cream. You're not feeding a sensual pleasure with a food or want to watch the movie again or listen to the music again. It's just naturally happening spontaneously. easily that this is harmonious. That quality, yeah, equipoise, you could call it, begins to fill out into, almost like arms embracing, you could call it the field of life, including the preferences that arise. Well, yes, there can be equanimity about preferences because, guess what? Awareness is naturally equanimous. Awareness is naturally open, accepting. You could say awareness is naturally acknowledging, accepting, and appreciating all at once. It sounds like a 1, 2, 3. In the nature of unconditioned awareness, which is what awareness is, it's unconditioned. 1, 2, 3, boom. Acknowledge, accept, appreciate. Package deal. So in that sense, then the way is clear and open, even for he, she, who sees preference. But if I believe in the preference, I am the preference, and I'm back in the game of division. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong. It happens. It's not a fall from grace. We haven't screwed up. It's all learning about seeing things clearly. So, what do you think about this?